Good afternoon. So last time we finished up talking about how we implemented a whole bunch of instructions in our processor, this sort of toy CPU, where we implemented these three move instructions. We have R move Q, where we take a value out of this register and put it back in, this register file, and we have a particular choice we make on this mux to take that value and forward to the register, and a particular choice we make here to choose the source register number to be the RB and not RA. And similarly, we had implementation of I remove Q, where instead we take the immediate from the instruction, which we got from the instruction memory, and M remove Q, where instead we take a value out of the data memory, which we make do a read. So there's a hidden read enable input here to make it do a read. And we take that value, put it into our register file, and select the appropriate register number to write to. So this is one way we have of describing a circuit. With this picture where we have muxes to indicate what happens, I'm not showing you everything because I'm not telling you what convert opcode does. Apparently, that takes our opcode and makes it 0 for R move Q in this case, and 1 for I remove Q and so on, but does something a bit different for this and a bit different for where we're choosing whether to add 2 or 10 to the PC. I'm not showing you all the details, but this is basically describing what the circuit does, and this is one way we could describe our processor. That when you want to build our fancy, maybe full x86 processor, you just draw lots of pictures like this, we give them to someone, and they actually build that physically. So that's an option. We could describe circuits with pictures, and then have those pictures be built into processors. And that's something we could do in the real world. We could have tools where we draw circuits. If you took DLD, that course often uses a tool called Logisim, which is of this sort, something what we often call a schematic capture tool, so called because we make a schematic, and the tool captures that. And we could take the output of that tool and turn it into a physical circuit. There are commercial things which do this, but they aren't actually very commonly used for processors. And this is because it's kind of awkward to add all those muxes and add enough detail so we actually specify exactly what convert opcode does. And what if you want to add a whole bunch of instructions and then your picture now gets really, really messy? Like this picture back here, this is pretty messy already, and we only have 3 instructions. When we add the other instructions, especially ones like, say, pop, which are more complicated than any of these instructions, it's going to get a lot messier. So what we often do instead is we're not going to use a picture-based representation, even though we could build tools to do that. Instead, we're going to have something that's more like a traditional programming language. So we're going to have some text-based representation of this circuit. So I'm going to write down lines of text, where I'm going to have, instead of lines, I'm going to have name things that look kind of like variables that represent those wires. And something is going to take that text description and compile it. But we're not going to aim at compiling it down to a program with assembly instructions and then machine code and then an executable image that we load. We're going to aim to compiling it down to a circuit. So the commercial versions of these tools ultimately will go through some set process with something akin to a compiler and an assembler, where our final output will not be a memory image to load, but will be a list of place this transistor here, and connect them here, and so on. So instructions we can actually use to build physical hardware. And just like in a real programming language, we don't deal with details like what registers are we using. There's lots of details that this programming language-like description can abstract away. And in this class, we're going to use one which will abstract away a lot of these details. So one thing, for example, is that we're not going to worry about how we build arithmetic operations from gates. Yes, we're actually going to have a bunch of AND, OR, NAND, etc. gates, and they're going to be wired up in some way that does say an add. we're not going to be concerned about that. We're just going to say we have an add operator that the people who made our programming language built for us, and they're going to know how to turn that into hardware. We're just going to say I want to do an add between these values, and they're going to worry about doing it. We aren't going to worry about building registers from transistors. We're just going to say I want a register with this many bits, and we're going to get that, and something else is going to worry about how does that actually work. We're just going to say I want a register. And same thing with memories. I'm not going to worry about how the memory actually works. I'm just going to say, this is a memory. Here's my input to the memory, and so on. And we also aren't going to worry about building muxes. We're just going to say, I want a mux which makes these choices. And our programming language-like tool is going to worry about how you actually build that mux and how you actually get the signal to say which of the mux options you use works. And that if this were a commercial tool, we'd specify this in this high-level way, and it would do something like what our compilers do to figure out how do I turn that into a bunch of gates, and then how do I optimize those gates to like take up less space and things like that. And this is the sort of thing people use when making real processors. They might clean up the output of the compiler if they don't like what gates it chooses and have more customization of that sort. We're not going to worry about that. We're just going to deal with this high-level tool and produce a processor in that, which could be turned into real hardware. Now, our tool is something called HCLRS, which is built just for this course. And as such, it doesn't have the functionality to actually produce a real physical circuit, because that's not something we actually need to do in this course. It also really assumes you're making a processor. So our tool has some hard-coded things which are only make sense if you're making a y86 processor. So this is easier for this class, but obviously as a general tool, you wouldn't have those things hard-coded. There'd be something more modular that you'd have to specify, but it has these built-in functionality. And what we're gonna get in reality is not, since it's not a physical circuit, it's gonna be a simulation where it will run for a cycle. We'll have, you know, simulate what a clock cycle does and show you what happens after each cycle and when it's done. So any questions about this general notion of what kind of tool we're using and the kinds of tools that exist? Okay, so our tool is going to be a bit different than our textbook's HCL. And we're going to try to go over most of those differences. So our textbook authors have a particular thing they built. We didn't like some of the things that did, most notably that they have even more things which really assume you're making a processor and are hard-coded that we're not going to do. Okay, so let's talk about building this simple processor. So we're going to have a processor that runs NOP instructions and knows of no other kind of instruction. So what we do for an NOP instruction is we take the PC, add one, that's the new PC. One of the post-quiz questions, so hopefully you do that. And that's fundamentally what we do. And in our version of HCL, we need to say, I need a register. So we're going to define a register explicitly. And this is the syntax we're going to use. So this syntax, we say register, and we have two letters, and then we have, in this case, some open curly brackets and one line of declaration. We can define multiple registers this way. In this case, we only have one we need to define, so that's all we're getting. So we have these two letters, and the first one, which I have in blue, lowercase p, that represents the input to the register. So this signal, which in this case comes from add1, this blue box which represents logic, the signal which comes from add1 is going to be named something starting with a lowercase p. The signal coming out of the register, which goes into the add1, which I've highlighted in green, that's going to be named starting with a capital F. The rule we're going to use is that when we have a set of registers like this, which we're going to call a register bank, that the name those two letters is always a lowercase input and an uppercase output. You aren't allowed to do anything else. So we know what those signals are. So we have this register in this bank called the PC. So we say the input, which is the lowercase letter, is connected. This is what our assignment operator means. You think of it as connecting two wires together to something which takes the output of it and adds one. And this is an example of our sort of high-level language. We have a built-in add component. We don't worry about how we actually turn that into gates. So any questions so far? So there's another notable thing on this picture, which is that I have the instruction memory, which we aren't doing anything with, because we only implement NOP. We don't care about any other instructions, so we don't actually need to look at anything in the instruction. Part of how our HCL is based on assuming you're making a y86 processor is that the instruction memory is a mandatory component. You have to use it. Otherwise, you'll get an error saying, what are you doing? You aren't reading any instructions. And the instruction memory, the way we use it, it has an input where we take in an address, and it has an output, and these just have fixed names in our HCL variant. So the name of the input is PC. This is not the same as my register. This is just the name of the input to the instruction memory. Generally, it should be equal to the address of the instruction you're currently executing. And we have an output, which is named i10 bytes. And that's going to be the instruction bytes we read from the memory. It's called i10 bytes because 10 bytes is our largest y86 instruction. And because our HCL variant is built for implementing y86, it always reads 10 bytes. If we're reading a shorter instruction, we still read 10 bytes. We just don't care about some of them. And since we have to use this component, we have to set its input. So we're going to have this line here where we connect the PC signal, the input to the instruction memory, to, in this case, the output of our PC register. There's one other component which is mandatory, and that's this thing we'll call the stat register. So this is a built-in component which tells our simulator whether to keep going or not. So it takes in a signal called stat, and there are predefined constants. So this is just a constant which has the value 1, in fact, I believe. But it's just an integer constant that we're connecting to this stat signal. So by supplying the constant stat AOK, we're saying at the end of this clock cycle, everything's fine, and I want you to keep going. The most notable other thing we could provide is stat HLT, which says at the end of this clock cycle, I'm done, I want you to stop the simulation. So on a real processor, we'd have something sort of similar connecting to like whatever controls the power to the processor. This is the closest analogy to that. But it's really about controlling our simulation. And we have to provide an input. There's no assumption about what you mean. If you don't provide it, you just get an error saying, sorry, I don't know what you want to do. Okay. So any questions about anything here? Yes?
So the PC :64 equals 0 is initializing the first instruction at the 0?
So the question is, what is the :64 equals 0? So the :64 says that this is a 64-bit value. And the equals 0, says that its initial value is 0, and you are required to provide that for every register you define. Otherwise, we don't know how does the processor start out. You have to have an initial value for every register. And speaking of initial values, another thing we need is we need some value for our memory, our instruction memory. It's a mandatory component. We also need to say, what's in the instruction memory? So we need to provide a program to run. And the way we're going to provide that to the simulator is with a file with the extension .yo. This kind of comes from y86 object file. but it's not really an object file. It's more akin to an executable. It doesn't have any like symbols in it. It just has the actual bytes to load into memory. And coming with HTLRS is a tool written by our textbook authors to convert a .ys file, which is a Y86 assembly file, to a .yl file. So you'll write a .ys file with syntax which should be familiar based on how we've gone over Y86, and you'll run that tool and you'll get a .yl file. So let's look at how that works. So I have my copy of HTLRS. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to run make to build all my tools. And then I'm going to have a HTL file I want to use. So here I have a CPU at this just nops. So I'm going to run this assembly file. So it has nop, 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 and nothing else. So that's my assembly file. One way I can run YAS, the tool that converts it to a .yo file, is with make and the name of the .yo file. I could also run the tool directly. This is printing out the command make is running. And now I have a .yo file. So you can see the .yo file is actually in a kind of human readable format. So we have an address, colon, and the bytes at that address in hexadecimal. So this is just to help you debug. We didn't have to do that, but certainly easier to read. And the stuff that's beyond the pipe symbol, that's just basically a comment. But in this case, the comment is set to what was in the original assembly file. So you can figure out what's going on better. OK, and we have our actual CPU, which I showed you earlier. This is that exact code. And the way I run it is I take my HTLRS program. I can run it with no options to figure out what it does. You can see it takes an HTL file and a .yo file. And there's some other options we might talk about later. So I take my HTL file and my .yo file, and I can run it. And I can see what happens. So this takes a while. And so anyone want to say, why is this happening? Is this what we should, why should I have expected this? And we see at the end it says it timed out. That it has a limit by default for the number of cycles it will run, and it timed out. So what, any idea, why did we see this happen? So back there. So there isn't a halt instruction. So the only instruction we implemented is nop, and we assumed everything was nop. We didn't check the opcode. So we just kept going. And you can see the PC got all the way up to 2710 hexadecimal. Notice that after each cycle, we have some output, which shows us what the values of each of the registers are, the value of R, the PC register, and also says, this is the signal you sent to the instruction memory on the PC wire, and here is the instruction I loaded decoded from Y86. It decoded the instruction. That doesn't mean that the processor you wrote decoded the instruction. It just means that we're giving you debugging output to let you know what you probably wanted to do. But in this case, what our processor does is just assumes it's an op and keeps going. Even though the instruction we read there is a halt, because all the memory we didn't initialize is going to start on the zeros, and zeros are halts. Okay. So let's add the feature where we actually do something about halts and other instructions. So here I have a mux in front of my stat register. So sometimes I want to say everything's fine. Like I have a nop. I know what to do for a nop. Sometimes I want to say, I have a halt, I want to stop the simulation, so I'll pass the constant set halt. And I have this third value, stat ins, which stands for invalid instruction. So that's going to act the same as halt, except it's going to print out an error message from the simulator. So I have to implement this mux. So how do I write a mux in HCL? And we're going to use something, a syntax that the book calls a case expression. So we have an open square bracket, a closed square bracket, and we have a condition. In this case, our first condition is x, which is some wire that we have, is 5, then output 1. If x is in 0 and 6, output 2, and so on. The way these case expressions work is the cases are evaluated in order. So if I supply x equals 5, I always get 1, even though x, yes, is greater than 2. And so on. Also, something that we're going to require of our case expressions that we haven't in prior semesters, and which our book doesn't, is that we're going to require all case expressions to have a default case at the end. We believe, based on feedback from prior TAs, that this will reduce errors that are hard to debug. So that's our syntax for case expressions, but we're missing a piece, which is how do we write this condition where we look at the opcode and do that. And we have this wire called i10bytes, which has the whole 10 bytes that were read from the instruction memory. We don't care about most of those. We want to get a part of them. So we need some way of subsetting bits. And the syntax we're going to have for doing that looks like this. We have a square bracket, the first bit, dot, dot, the last bit. And this is first up to and not including the last. And you have to know, how do we number bits for this? So this is usually not a problem we have. Like when we're talking about bits in a number, like in C, like you can't say, give me bit 17. You can say, shift the number left 17. You can do things like that, but you can't say, give me bit 17. But here, we have to say, what's bit 0, what's bit 1, what's bit 2? And the policy we're going to use is that we're going to say the least significant bit is bit 0, and we number from there. And when we read a value from a memory, we're going to read it as a little endian number. So the 10-byte instructions we read are going to be 10-byte little endian numbers. So the least significant 8 bits of those numbers are from the first byte, the second least significant 8 bits are from the second byte, and so on. So this is a big source of confusion when we're talking about interpreting instructions in memory and finding like where the register numbers are, or the opcodes, or the function codes, or the thing which indicates what condition code you're using, and so on. So let's go through an example. So here's a push instruction. So you remember push, if you look it up in the table, it has the opcode OXA, that's 10. And that's in the top 4 bits of the first byte of the instruction, the most significant 4 bits of the first byte. And because we don't have any function codes for push, the least significant 4 bits of the first byte are the constant 15. And in the second byte of our push instruction, we have in the top, the most significant 4 bits, we have the register number RA. This is always where RA appears, the most significant 4 bits of the second byte of an instruction. And since we don't have a second register number, the least significant 4 bits of that second byte are the constant 15. So this means that memory at x plus 0, where x is the address of this instruction, contains the value AF, so hexadecimal AF. And memory at x plus 1 contains the value 2F. So far, this like matches what you've seen on the table. So if we're interpreting these 2 bytes together as a 16-bit little endian number, what we're going to do is we're going to say, well, this first byte here, that is the least significant part of this number. This second byte here, that is the second least significant part of this number. And if we were interpreting more bytes, we have the x plus 2 byte over here, and so on. So this means that if we want to get the opcode, it's going to be these bits. This is 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. So it starts at bit 4 and goes up to and not including bit 8. So when we write HCL code, we're going to ask for bits 4.8 to get the opcode. Similarly, when we want to get RA, we're not going to ask for bits 8 through 12, we're going to ask for bits 12 through 16. So I'm mentioning this really carefully because this is a constant source of confusion, and obviously you'll get very interesting bugs, like if you're reading what you think is RA but it's actually RB, or if you're reading what you think is the opcode but it's actually the function slash condition code part of the instruction. You'll get very weird bugs. You don't want to do that. Yeah.
You said to get register A, you get 12 dot dot 16
would be the HCL syntax. So this is 12, 13, 14, and 15. But the HCL syntax is 12 inclusive to 16 exclusive. So generally, the pattern is if you want the first byte, it's bits 0 through 7. If you want the opcode, that's not bits 0 through 4, that's the function or condition code. Yes, it's 0, but that doesn't mean it's what's leftmost when we write down instructions like this. Because what this table is writing down is it's writing down a list of bytes. It's not writing down a big number, which is what you're subsetting. It's writing down the list of bytes that make up that number. So you need to remember to look up the byte you want, figure out what bits those are, and then figure out which bits of that byte we're talking about, since we have a list of byte values here. So yeah, the opcode, you'll ask for bits 4 through 8, because that's the most significant bits of byte 0. When you're getting RA, you're asking for bits 12 through 16, not 8 through 12, because it's the most significant byte bits, the second byte. And when you're asking for RB, that's when you're going to want bits 8 through 12. So the other thing you might need to do is extract, say, V or D or dest. For that, you'll just take the whole range. And because we always treat values in little endian order, and we're taking a little endian integer out of another one, it's just going to work the way it should work. So if you ask for bits 16 through 80, you will get the value V that you want to store in the register. And it will be in the way the register file will expect it. So any questions about this? Any of this, what bits are what issue with our instruction encoding? Okay. So now that we know that, let's actually take advantage of this. So I need to extract the correct part instruction. So I know I can do that by saying bits 4.8. So I've just done that and used that as part of my conditions for my mux for stat. You notice I have this assignment equals equals nop. So nop is a predefined constant because our tool assumes you're making a y86 processor, so we have some predefined very helpful constants. So nop is just going to be, this is 1, and this is just the same as writing 0. That's just predefined constants. You could have written the numbers manually and looked them up, but I prefer using the constants so I know what's going on. And we're just saying if it's not, it's not A-OK, we're going to pass that value. Otherwise, we're going to pass halt, and if it's halt. And if none of the above, our default case, we want to pass the invalid instruction status, which is going to be the same as hold. It's just going to say there was an error. So, and we can, in fact, I have a handy copy of this CPU here. And we can just run this on our previous nops.io file. And we can see it stops after 6 cycles with the PC at address 6 as the net value after halting. And that's because address 5, if you look at, we have a dump of memory here. So we know that we have a 1, 0, that's 16, and byte 0, 1, we have a 16, and so on. There's no value listed here, but all unspecified values are going to start out as zeros, so there's a halt there. And that's what was read. Okay, so any questions on how this CPU works? So let's take a step further and add jump. So let's do our not jump CPU that you saw last time. We're finally getting up to the level of like the first CPU toy we showed you. So I'm going to do some sort of shortcuts of the sort that I would recommend doing when you're writing your own HCL code. So I could have written, like I did before, i10 bytes 4.8 equals nop and so on. But instead, what I've done is I've defined my own wire called iCode. And I'm calling it iCode because that's what the book calls it, not because it's a good name. And I'm saying that that wire is connected to bits 4 through 8 of i10 bytes. I'm also defining a wire called dest. I'm saying that's bits 8 through 72. That's where the dest is if we look up the encoding for jumps. And I'm then using that to assign to another wire I've defined called valp. Valp, again, named because that's what our book is going to call that signal, not because it's a good name. And I have this mux here where I say if the iCode is nop, I give PC plus 1. I do this signal, this the top input to that mux. Otherwise, I input dest if it's JXX. The reason the constant is called JXX is because it's the constant for the opcode. And remember, that top 4 bits is shared by all kinds of jumps. So it's set to JXX to remind you that it doesn't. This matches all jumps, not just unconditional jumps. And I have to have a default case for IMUX. And I've decided that this processor doesn't do anything useful for anything but jumps and nops. So I just set a default case where I put a value, in this case, 0x bad bad bad. The reason I chose that value, you don't have to, you can choose any value. But the reason I chose that value is because I want to know if this case gets used when it's not supposed to. And I would recommend having some value like this, because if you like look at the final output of your processor and you like see that REX is set to bad, 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 like it would be nice to know that rather than having REX be set to 0 because you put 0 as the default and not realize anything went wrong. And note that I similarly have my stat register setting, just like before. I just have two instructions I want to say are A-OK, otherwise I halt. So any questions on what I'm doing here? Thing in this code. Yes. Okay. And just like before, we can run that code. So I want a file which will actually test it. So here is an assembly file with some jumps and some nops and a halt. So I will assemble that by making the .io file, and I can, again, it's human readable output. Something you may notice is that when the VO files have multi-byte instructions, the way they're formatted is that they have each byte one after the other in the order they appear in memory. So 7-0 for our jump instructions is the first byte of the dump instruction. There's no ordering based on endianness sort of thing. It's just a list of byte values that just happens to have no spaces between the bytes. And once again, I can run that. So I can take my not jump cpu.hcl and run it on that. And I can see output. Let's look at what happens individually. So you can see I can trace what's going on because the simulator not only shows me the value of the PC, it says what value did you pass to the instruction memory, and it decodes that instruction so you can know what's supposed to be going on. So you can see we load NOP, we load the first jump, which goes to address 13, 13 hex rather. Then we go load PC from 13, that's 13 hex, that sounds right, and go to address 0xA. And then we go from hex A to hex 1C from the next jump, and so on. And then we have a NOP, and a NOP at the next address, and then the last fault. And that is, in fact, the point at which, after we load that, we end up faulting. And we end up running for, according to this, 7 seconds. Okay. So that's sort of an introduction to what running HCL looks like. So let's talk a little more thoroughly about things in our HCL. So first, let's do the short version of differences from the book. So in the book, when they declare their own wires, they use bool or int, rewrite the word wire, no matter the size. You always specify the number of bits it has. That's what was the colon was representing, that we had a 64-bit valp because we wanted to fit a memory address in it, or we had a 4-bit iCode because it wanted to fit a 4-byte opcode in it. The book uses names like valc. In their implementation, there were many restrictions on the names you could use. We do not have that. You can use names which you find more intuitive than valc, like, say, ALU output, if you like. RMUXs have to have a default case. This is not a requirement in the book's case expressions. I think what they did is they just had, if none of the cases matched, there was an implicit 1:0 case. Our textbook, when they had their students implement it, they had them be supplied an ALU. So you like had to set ALU inputs. We're not going to have that. We're going to have you make your own ALU just by having a MUX that chooses between operations. So let's talk about components that HCLS provides. So first, I showed you register banks. We declared this PC register. Let's talk a little more thoroughly about what that looks like. So as I said earlier, we have two letters, a lowercase letter for the input, an uppercase letter for the output, and we have then a bunch of register names. For each register name, there's going to be an input signal, which is prefixed by the lowercase letter, and an output signal, which is prefixed by the uppercase letter. So each register we declare must have a width in bits and also must have a default value. The default value will be the initial value of the register. There's also some other signals associated with every bank of registers called stall and bubble. They're stall underscore the output name, in this case y, and so on. We'll talk about this more later in the semester when we talk about pipelining, for which they will be very useful. So this is our register declaration, what it looks like. We have our default value. The default value note is the starting value for now. That's all we're going to see it used for. So we also have wires. So our syntax for declaring wires is we say wire, we give a wire name and a wire width. You can have multiple declarations separated by commas if you like. Each one has to have a width. You may not assign a value to a wire in the same line you declare it. You need to have a semicolon and something else. And you can assign a value to a wire, which is really connecting something to the wire. You can do that exactly once, and you can use the value of a wire to connect to other things as many times as you like. And this represents anything that can accept or produce a signal. So wires, you define yourself this way, but everything that's part of a built-in component, like that PC signal or I10 bytes, that's also a wire. It also has a width it was declared with, even though you didn't declare it. And it has the same rules about signals being provided to it, that if it's an input wire for one of our components, you can assign a value to it once. You can also use it as an output wire. That's legal, just like, because it can be used by that component and you again. And you know, it basically works the same way as if someone before your code defined that wire. So wires really are about connecting things. And this means that order doesn't matter. A wire is either connected to something or it isn't. When our simulator figures out what's going on, it just says, I have these values on register output wires and things like that. It says, what do I do with them? Well, I'm going to see they go to this assignment, they go to this assignment, and it's going to keep going forwards until it gets to all the outputs, like the stat register and so on. So it doesn't care about the order in which you do things. So these two things, for example, here, I'm using valp, and later on in my input file, the assignment is, it doesn't matter. It's just going to figure out, was valp assigned? If so, you're going to get the value that was assigned in this cycle. Every cycle, it's going to go through the whole process. It's going to figure out the order in which values will propagate, which need not be the way you wrote them. So you can think about the wire is connected or not connected. So you also saw that wires have these widths. And where wire widths are going being something you have to match. And you notice that registers also had a width, and so that defines the width of the input and output wires to the register that are created when you make a register bank. And the rule is that if you have two values with different widths, you can't assign them to each other. That's an error. So if you have a small value, you want to store a big value in, you need to say, how do I get convert that big value to a small value? It's one way you can do it is by using our bit subsetting operator. So values besides wires can have widths, and in particular, constants sometimes have widths. So if you have a constant like this or this, a decimal or a hexadecimal constant, those don't have a width, meaning that when you try to assign them to a wire, they'll convert to whatever width they need, even if this means truncating the value. If you have a binary constant, which you can represent like this, this is binary 10, 1010, assuming I can do binary math, that is 4 bits wide. It needs to be, if you assign it to a wire and it's bigger than 4 bits, you'll get an error. If it's smaller than 4 bits, you'll get an error. And most of the built-in constants are effectively declared in this way. So if you like take the if you take the constant not, for example, that's 4 bits wide, you can't assign it to a 64-bit value without doing something. Yes?
So which bits get truncated?
Which bits get truncated? The upper bits. Just like if you took an integer in C and tried to put it in a short. So most of the built-in constants have widths based on, for example, for stat OK, the width of the stat register expects, which is, I think, 3 bits. For NOP, the width of an opcode, which is 4 bits, and so on. And this is intended to help catch errors. It's not like we had to have them have widths. Any questions on wire widths? Yes?
Why exactly does the first one not have a width?
This is just an arbitrary rule we have made. And it's mainly because there's not a convenient way of specifying like a width of 3 that way. Or like a width of 7, right? If I have two hexadecimal digits, do I mean width 8, width 7, width 6? So we've just decided we'll make it convert to whatever. Okay, so let's talk a bit about built-in components. So we've seen two of these. We've seen the stack register, which is really just an input signal. It's not really a register because we can't really change its value because if it's not A-OK or processor stops, and we can't read it. And we also see in the instruction memory. So the stat register, that's how we stop the machine. So we have these predefined constants, and you can look up in the HTLS write-up what their values are. They're just numbers. So we have A-OK, keep going, halt for stop, and we have a bunch more which are all errors. So we've seen one of them, which is INS for invalid instruction, and I think that's probably the only one we'll actually use, but there are a bunch of other possible error values. And this must be set because the simulator needs to know how many cycles do I go for. So any questions about stat? So we also have the instruction memory. So the instruction memory has two wires it defines. So one is the PC, wire called PC, which is the address it reads from, which probably is equal to your PC register, but that only happens if you write code to do it. We also have an output wire called I10 bytes, so called because it's always 80 bits wide, it reads from that address and interprets it as an 80-bit little endian number. And you're going to subset that wire, you know, to get the bits you care about. Often you won't even, you know, do anything with the actual other bits because it's like a 1 byte or 2 byte instruction. So those are the two components we've seen. Let's talk about the two components we haven't seen. So one is the register file. So because this is, we assume you're building a y86 processor, we have a built-in register file. You may have kind of noticed some hint of this in that our output here has register values. They have to come from somewhere that comes from that built-in register file. And this register file works the way the ones Mira described. So it has four inputs which take in register numbers, so the index of a register, so 0 for RAX, and so on, and 15 means no register. So there are two which are sources. So we have source A and source B. These represent a register to read from. So if you set reg source A to 0, that means that reg output A will, in the same cycle, be the output of RAX, or the value of RAX, because RAX has register number 0. And the same with reg source B and reg output B. We also have two destination register numbers. If you want to write 42 to RAX, you can set reg dest E to 0 for RAX's register number. And you can set reg input E to 42. And at the end of the cycle, so in time for the next cycle to start, RAX's value will change to 42. And if you don't want to write a register, and you're setting regdest E and regdest M, you have to set them to regnone. Otherwise, they're not set to regnone, they have some value, and some register is going to be written to. You can also set reg source A or source B to regnone, in which case it will output 0. Because reg output A and output B have to have some value. We aren't allowed to have wires without values. They have to have some value, so we just chose to make that value 0. So something notable about the register file and the data memory is that unlike the instruction memory and the stat register, they aren't mandatory. So you don't have to set the register source and destination. And if you don't, they will have sensible defaults. So if you don't set regdest E, it's going to be as if regdest E is hardwired to regnone, to 15. And so, and if you don't set reg source A and you try to use reg output A, you'll get an error because we're being kind. So to show what this might look like, here's a CPU that does add, like the one we saw last time. Here's what that would look like in HCM. So we have our PC register, we increment by 2. In this case, we're interpreting real add instructions with an opcode, so we have 2 bytes. We extract the I code, the function code, RA and RB. We set regsource A to RA, regsource B to RB, which we've extracted from the output of the instruction memory. And so that means that reg output A will be the value of the register with number RA, and reg output B will be the value of the register with number RB, which are the numbers from the instruction, the 4-bit numbers. So we add them together and make that be connected, that addition result be connected to the input to the register file, which takes a value. And in addition to providing a value, we need to provide a register number, and that register number is the RB number from the instruction. So any questions on what this is doing? And you can notice that I'm not using reg-m here. That's fine, it will default to 15. So it won't do anything. And so this is what we get there. So we also have a data memory. And this data memory, like the register file, is going to have the same sorts of inputs that Samira talked about last time. But there are going to be some named wires in our HCL. And our data memory is different than our register file in that it can either do a read or a write, but we have to choose. So we have these enable signals. So the read enable signal is called mem read bit. It's a 1-bit wire. If it's 0, we don't read. If it's 1, we do. And we have mem write bit, which if it's 0, we don't read. If it's 1, we do. We don't write. If it's 1, we do write. We have the input memory address. So this is where we do a read or a write, what memory location. And it applies to either reading and writing. And we have a mem input. So notice that with all these built-in components, the wires are named from the perspective of the component. The output of our register file was named reg output. You know, it's your input when you're writing your code, but it's the output from the register file's perspective. Same thing is true with the data memory. Mem input is the input from the data memory's perspective. It's your output, you're gonna set a value to it, but it's the data memory's input, and that's mem input is the value that we're going to actually write if we're writing. If we're reading, you don't need to specify it. If you're only reading. And we have mem output, which is the output of the data memory. That's the value we just read. So the way you use this is if you're reading, you set mem read bit to 1, mem write bit to 0, because you presumably don't want to also write. And you set the address where you want to read. In this case, we're reading from address 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, hex. And in the same cycle, mem output is going to have the value that was read from that location, which is going to be an 8-byte, 64-bit value. For reading, you set the you set the write bit to 1, and presumably you don't care about reading, so you set the read bit to 0. And you set the address to where you want to write, and you supply a 64-bit value to write. And in practice, you're not going to have like this sort of hard-coded setting of mem read bit and mem write bit. You're going to have a mux which like looks at the I code and has one case where it's 0 and one case where it's 1 and so on. So any questions about any of these built-in components? Okay, so let's talk about some other features in HCLRS. So we had our not jump CPU, and there's a few other things we have, features of HCLRS I'd like you to know about because, well, you're going to be implementing something much more complicated than not jump, and you're going to have to like make it work and debug it. So one thing is there's an option dash E or dash dash debug, and it produces output like this. So it will show you for the built-in components, we have this line here, which is says i10 byte set to this because we read from memory at this address. So for every built-in component that does something, it will output a line saying what happened. So if you read from a register, it will say reading from this register because this source signal was sent. And also, you know, we have our usual output of what the PC signal is. This is not your program counter register. This is the input called PC to the instruction memory. And also our attempt to decode that instruction, which might not be the code you wrote. And we also have the values of all wires in alphabetical order. So during that cycle. And you can see this after every cycle. And this is in addition to other things you should pay attention to, like usually when you have processors which aren't just nop and jump, you'll worry about the values of the registers and the register files. So you'll look at that table up there. Those are all going to be in hexadecimal. You have the values of all your registers and register banks. So that's up there, and you have also all bytes of memory. And remember, if a memory part of memory is not in this table, then it's zeros. Basically, the table only shows you the bytes which were actually sent, either by loading it from the .yo file or by writing to the data memory. I guess also I should give a note about the memory. So you notice we have only one image of memory here, even though we have an instruction memory and a data memory in our processor. So if you write to the data memory, yes, you can then read it with the instruction memory. There, it's as if they're just two views of the same real memory, just to keep things simple. So we'll talk later on about how real memories work, and we'll see that our data and instruction memories are stand-ins for a different kind of hardware component. Yes?
So 0 and 1 are the used memory. Those are the two instructions we're looking at.
So the question is, what is the 0 and 1 where?
The used memory.
So this means that, for example, this 1C here, what this is saying is that hex address 00000000B is 1C. And similarly, this 0A here, address 00001 4 has value hex 0A, is what this is saying. So the top is saying, so the left side says, what are the first hexadecimal digits of the memory address? And the top is telling you what the last digit of the hexadecimal memory address is.
So that's big and endian.
So there's no endianness because we're just telling you explicitly what the address of every single byte is. So there's no reason to be concerned about endianness here.
So
this is the memory. So the data and instruction memory read from these bytes. So if you write to the data memory, you will read. You can read that value from the instruction memory. I don't recommend you do this, but that is the correct thing for your processor to do. And like we could test that your processor actually does that sometimes. So that's our debugging mode. There's another notable flag, which is dash I for interactive. And what that does looks like this. It says, press enter to continue. And I can press enter, and it runs for another cycle, and another cycle, and another cycle, and so on. I can also combine that with dash D. So I get my debug output, I can muse about it, and then move to the next cycle, and so on. So these are seem both like probably useful features that we hope you would know about, and probably the main way you would figure out what's going on when something's weird. You know, your question should be, well, what wires did I define that affect that? And you should like look at the values in the debug output. You should get to the cycle where you think something is going wrong, because if you have a longer program you're running, it might not be the first one. This is generally what you probably should be doing to debug your processor. Right. And one more mode. So another option that we have is dash Q. So this is what dash Q looks like. Dash Q just says, don't show me any of the intermediate output, just run till you're done for whatever reason, and then output, and then it outputs the state there. So it says we took 7 cycles and halted. We didn't send any of the registers to anything. Memory still has that same content. Our PC register in the cycle we halted at the end of that cycle, it got set to bad, 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 because, well, jump and nop we didn't have a halt case on the next PC instruction, next PC mux. That's a bit of a bug, isn't it? We didn't have one, so we selected the default case and got that value. And this is our final state. And commonly, we'll give you a file where you know what the values of like RAX and RVX should be, and you think you did it right, and you want to quickly check. This is probably the way you'll do that. You'll just run the whole thing without getting a whole big spam of output and compare this carefully. You only have one set of register numbers on your screen, so you don't have the problem of looking at the wrong cycle and getting confused and so on. Okay, so for HCL, things to remember. So all our thing named values are wires. So there's some wires that you declare explicitly. There's some wires which are created because you created other things. So when you have register banks, there's an input and output wire created for every register. And there's some wires which are built in. So we had our PC and I10 bytes for the instruction memory. And we had similar sets of wires that are built in, that are pre-wired to our built-in components that are designed for implementing y86 processors. We have this syntax for muxes, what we call case expressions, which is the only thing we evaluate in order, pretty much. Everything else, it's just whatever order makes things work, because everything happens every cycle. Here, we evaluate test 1. If it's true, we send value 1. Other than we evaluate test 2, and so on. And we have to have a default case, the end of each mux. And this is a rule which will hopefully reduce annoying errors this semester. We could define register banks. And we have this funny syntax where we have these two letters to name our bank of registers. A bank is a collection of registers you defined, distinct from the register file, which is you don't get to define. It's there, and you better use it, because we're going to look at the register values when we're grading. So you can define your own register banks. Our only example here was the PC. You're going to provide a letter for the input name, which is lowercase, and a letter for the output name, which is uppercase. And the input signals will be prefixed with the input name. This is the next value you want the register to have, next cycle. And the output signals will be prefixed with the output letter. And that's the current value the register has that it's outputting for you to use. So when we start talking about pipelining, we'll have much more use for our own register banks. But for now, pretty much, we're just going to use them for the PC and for the flags, ZF and SF. Those are the only registers you're going to need to find. And we also had fixed functionality. We had our register file with the 15 built-in registers, including the two we read and write. We had our memories, which, remember, access the same memory in common. They're just two different views of it. And we have the stat register for telling the simulator whether to start or stop. So any questions about any of these things we talked about? some other little notes. So, ALU, I mentioned that the textbook, they provided one, you're gonna need to write one. That's not hard, because you know, you aren't actually implementing addition, subtraction, or and. Those are provided operators. All you're doing is the logic to choose between them, so you can write that. And I have, I guess, one thing I haven't talked about, which is the syntax for declaring constants, but I think it's straightforward, and you obviously can implement a full processor without declaring any new constants. So our textbook, you know, in addition to having a different HCL variant, makes some design choices which were kind of hard-coded into the version of HCL they were using. So one example is that in our textbook design, memory output always goes to the M port of the register file. That the instructions which read values from memory, like MR move Q, always use the M port of the register file, not the E1. So when I talk about a port of the register file, I mean for reading, the read register number signal and the corresponding output. For writing, I mean the write register number signal and the corresponding input. That together is a port. And same with the data memory, we say the inputs that let us read our port. And if we had two read ports, we could read two values at once. So you don't have to do that. Our textbook, it was hard-coded. If you feel it makes more sense to do it a different way, that's fine. Another thing our textbook does is when they add or subtract 8 from RSP, they use this common ALU. You can absolutely do that, but you could just have a separate adder thing that you have somewhere. You could just say, you know, write output A plus 8. That is a thing you're allowed to do rather than using some common ALU mocks. Our rules are that we're going to tell you how fast your processor needs to go. For the first part of the HCL assignments, it's a single cycle and instruction. Like, you aren't allowed to take two cycles to execute some instructions. Or execute two instructions in a cycle. No, one cycle per instruction, and it has to use the supplied register file in memory. Because we're going to look at the values in memory and the register file to actually figure out, did you do the right thing? Otherwise, what we're looking for is, does it do the right thing? Does it actually implement Y86? We don't care if you follow the same design choices as the textbook. You probably find that the easiest thing to do, but that's not what the assignments are about. But speaking of same design choices, I want to mention one other tool, which is YIS. So YIS is the textbook's reference Y86 implementation. So if I run it on not jump, it says we stopped in 7 steps. So we took 7 cycles, 7 instructions, which matches what we did. And the PC is 0x1e. That's where we stopped. And we stopped with status halt, so it wasn't an error. And it also tells us that the ZF condition code is 1, the SF condition code is 0. And the OF condition code, which we won't implement, is 0. If we ran this on a Y86 file which changes registers, so for example, there's a test file that's provided with HCLRS, which is a test of the op instruction, op Q, add, subtract, so on instructions. If we run that, we see that this shows us what registers changed. When it shows you that, it shows you the initial value of the register and the final value. And the initial value is generally going to be 0. Similarly, if memory changes, so here is a test of the RM move Q instruction that's supplied. It's going to say at this memory address, it was initially 0, now it's this 8000x. So if you ever want to know what a Y86 file is supposed to do, even when you've written yourself, you can use this to do that. There are some things that we won't have you implement that are corner cases, like the overflow flag, what happens if you access invalid memory. But besides that, this should match what your processor does. When you have the full processor. Okay, so let's finish up by extending our move example, maybe thinking a bit about what that means for implementing an HCL. So we had, when we started out, at the end of last time, we had these three instructions implemented. All of them moved to some register instructions. And let's think about adding one more instruction, which is RM move queue. So move to memory. So what's something we need to add to do this? What's something we're missing that we need? What's something that this instruction does that's not currently doable, no matter what this convert opcode box does? So in HCL, this is what can we not do by just modifying our mux cases to, like, say, instead of iCode equals iRemoveQ, we say like iCode equals iRemoveQ or rRemoveQ, something like that. We name one thing we don't do. One of them is obvious. Yes. Yeah, so we don't ever input anything to the memory as a value to rent. So we better fix that. So that's one thing we're going to need to fix, is that this value needs to come from somewhere. In fact, it needs to come from RA, the value of RA, which we already have as output. So that needs to be wired to data in. So there's one other thing we need to do, which is we need to not write to a register. Right now, we're just going to always write to a register. We want to not do that. And so the way we're going to fix that, most likely, is that we already have a mux in front of the register number. And we know that the way our register file works, if you read the description, which if you don't remember from the slide set, is in the HTLRS write-up. So if you supply number 15, it doesn't break. So we need a way of supplying the register number 15. And that's going to be controlled by the opcode. So this is an extra case in this mux, iCode equals rmmoveq, then reg9, which is 15. And we also need our data input. And one other thing, which I just didn't draw here, is that our memory, data memory, if you remember how it works, it has a read bit, write bit signal. So we need to set the write bit signal went for this instruction, but definitely no others. We don't want to accidentally be like writing zeros to memory on an iRemoveQ instruction. So we'll have a mux which is mem write bit equals, and a mux which is if the iCode is mRemoveQ, then one, otherwise zero. So does all this make sense? And everything else we can deal with. So for example, we need to add a case to this mux because we need to add 10. That's presumably not something we had there before, but that's just changing a line we had for a test to add or iCode equals rmoveq or something like that. So any questions about this? So the lab on Wednesday and the following homework, which I know there is a homework due the day before the exam. Yes, I looked at the schedule. I'm aware of that. The following homework is doing implementing for the lab just something which increments the PC correctly for non-jump instructions. And for the homework, implementing not jump, iRemoveQ, and rRemoveQ, I believe, and halt. The full list is actually in the write-up, and you should pay attention to that. Okay, so that's all I have, unless there are questions for me. Okay.